You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey you, welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. Oh, I'm so excited that it's with Jess Baker. Jess is the person who first kind of brought me into body positivity and then fat activism. It was one of her articles that actually got me thinking about my body in a really different way. She was giving permission to fat people in a way that I just didn't know was even possible. I thought the only way to exist in a fat body was to hate it or to want it to be different. And she started me down a path of asking different questions, not necessarily easy questions, but different questions. And here we are. Having the opportunity to talk with her is definitely a fangirl moment for me. And the other thing that makes me so sad about that is we had some major technical difficulties when we were recording this. We could not get technology to be on our side. We had to start and stop about 8 times. It took us about 40 minutes of trying and readjusting and recalibrating before we finally got a good conversation really going that the technology agreed with. So you will hear in this episode, as much as it pains me to say so, that there are some little hiccups and starts and stops. We put it together the best that we could because, God, it was so wonderful chatting with her, and she's super busy. So I really appreciated the fact that she made time for us to share her stories about her new book, Land Whale, which if you have not yet read it, it is such a sweet, vulnerable, real, raw memoir of essays. I also want to let everybody know, if you heard last week's episode, then you know in just like a week or two, I'm going to be emailing out an official recommended book list based on an email that I got from someone who was looking for some resources on how to become more sex positive and what I recommended. So I'm putting together an official book list, the books that I recommend most to clients and also on the show. If you want to be the first to get that book list, then you just have to make sure you're on the Sex Gets Real newsletter. There is a link in the show notes and also at sexgetsreal.com for this episode where you can click to sign up with your name and your email. And I will send you that book list in just a couple of weeks. Plus, it'll also give you a chance to be on my newsletter where I ask all kinds of questions and offer stories and resources that you never hear on the show. So be sure to check that out. Also, don't forget to support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/sexgetsreal. Weekly bonus content, listener emails, all kinds of fun ways to support the show. And then finally, I just bought a pack of cards from the Vulva Gallery, known as Mary Clitmas cards. They are beautiful paintings of vulvas, of course, from the Vulva Gallery. And I will be holding a drawing in November to pull 10 lucky listeners' names and addresses. And then I will be handwriting a little note to each person who gets their name selected, and then physically mailing cards to whoever those 10 people are from me. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be happening later in November, and then I'll start sending holiday cards out to the folks whose names get pulled. I'll also be providing an address where people can mail me cards because I love snail mail. So if you're the kind of person that sends holiday cards, then I would love to receive one from you. Details on that coming soon. So let me tell you a little bit about Jess, if you're not familiar with her, and then we will jump into my interview with her. Jess Baker is a positive, progressive, and magnificently irreverent force to be reckoned with in the realm of self-love advocacy and mental health. She is internationally known for preaching the importance of body liberation, hard conversations, strong coffee, and even stronger language. Jess burst into the body positivity scene when she created her own ads mocking Abercrombie and Fitch for discriminating against all body types, a move that landed her on the Today Show and garnered a loyal following for her raw, honest, and attitude-filled blog missives. When not writing, Jess spends her time speaking around the world, working with plus-size clothing companies, organizing body liberation events, taking pictures in her underwear, and attempting to convince her cats that they like to wear bow ties. Here is my chat with the incredible Jess Baker. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Jess. I'm ridiculously excited to talk to you today about land whale and all things related. So it's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm really excited.
Oh, good. Me too. For listeners who don't know, and I'm sure, Jess, you hear this all the time, so just allow me a moment. You know, it was probably 8 or 9 years ago that my journey into fat acceptance and body positivity and questioning all the things was from one of your blog posts, and it changed the direction of everything that happened to me after that day.
That just gave me like full body goosebumps. My God. Thank you. That's so kind.
You're so welcome. It was it was honestly the first time I'd ever read anybody say, people know what you look like when you're wearing your clothes, you're not hiding anything. And I was like, what the
black
fuck?
Black doesn't make you not fat. It doesn't make you not fat. You're still fat if you are black. It's cool.
Right.
Like, your body's cool the way it is.
Right. And maybe if people are still showing up, it's because they're okay with how your body's looking, clothes on and off. And I was kind of like, holy shit, I haven't been fooling anybody. And then that was the start of all kinds of new questions.
Yes. Especially in the bedroom, right? Where it's like so... Man, that's, I love that you're doing this podcast because it's such a, one, we don't talk about it enough. And two, like, it's one thing to wear black in public, but like, how do you, when you're having sex with someone else, like, oh my God, I'm really excited.
I know, me too. So here's where I would love to start. There's a, so first of all, for people who aren't aware, you have a new book out called Land Whale on Turning Insults into Nicknames, Why Body Image is Hard, and How Diets Can Kiss My Ass, which is a fantastic title. There's a significant amount of the book really talking about the ways that growing up in the Mormon church kind of separated you from your body and the ways that you were taught that your body was dangerous and detestable, and also all the messages that you got about what it meant to be in a relationship and to be sexual. And so can we just kind of start with that? I know a lot of listeners have been on kind of a separating themselves from the religions they grew up in journey. So can you talk a little bit about kind of what that was like and where it led you?
Am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Fuck yes.
Okay, that's a really good thing for me to know. Oh my God, Mormonism. I feel like it's such a small part of like my story when it comes to sex in my body. Ultimately, it's how I grew up, right? So very much part of my formative years. And the world was telling me that my body shape was not okay, but the Mormon church was telling me even more. It was telling me that, you know, kind of that my body was a weapon and was dangerous, and then nothing else. Like, there was no explanation, or like, it was just kind of this, and if anything bad happens, it's your fault. And so cover up, you know, it's really interesting because I was Mormon throughout my childhood and then also into college, which, I went to BYU Idaho, which is a Mormon college, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, LDS, but we're just going to go with Mormon. First of all, they have like really terrible views on just queerness in general. Mm-hmm. But even for like straight couples, they, in college, people were dating and getting married. But the furthest you could go, the most scandalous thing you could do was in the real world, if you sleep with someone and it's like, whatever, it's a one night stand. And at BYU Idaho, they had something called, we called a NICMO, which is a non-committal makeout session. So that's kind of the like breadth of sexuality that like people experience. I don't know. Mormonism specifically really reminds me of the rape culture that we see. Because what I was told was my body was a weapon and that it was my responsibility to keep myself in check so that the boys would not be tempted. There was a lot of that kind of rhetoric. And if they were tempted, it would be my fault. And if something happened, then they would lose their place in heaven. And then that would also be my fault. So there was a lot of protect at all costs the men and responsibility lying on the woman no matter what. And it was kind of gross. But the interesting thing is that at that point, you know, like when I was in a, like a teenager, even a preteen, I was already aware of the world's messaging that my body was not desirable. So it was just, it really was a clusterfuck of, I don't know much about anything, but I do know that I'm not okay for a million reasons. That's kind of where I sat during the 18, 19 years of Mormonism.
So kind of coming out of this background where, you know, sex was seen as pre-marriage, this like terrible monstrous thing, and then post-marriage is this beautiful sacred thing, and there's supposed to be like this magic switch. And also just this like, you know, danger around your body mixed with already getting these messages around what kind of body you had and how much value it had. You know, I think one of the things that's so beautifully demonstrated through your book in, and the way that you write always is just this relationship of kind of distancing and kind of cutting yourself off from your body and not really having, you know, a relationship with it where you can like hear it and trust it.
Absolutely. And you think the intersection of modesty and that spirituality kind of world and fatness is really fascinating because the world tells us a lot of things about fat bodies. And, you know, there's like this on one end of the spectrum, there's this desexualization of fat bodies. Mm-hmm. There is in other ways, hypersexualization. But so there was already this desexualization and like disappearing as a person, like people don't see you. And that plus this modesty and not, you know, so for those who may not be familiar, like in university, college age kids, you had to wear, everything was below the knee. You know, even things like you couldn't have a 5 o'clock shadow if you were a guy and couldn't wear flip flops. It was almost as very, and I watched my mom do this, where you could easily just disconnect completely and become, you know, like a wallflower, like just not seen. You're covered up, you're fat. And so there was this weird part that was like, my body's dangerous because sexualization, but also I'm fat. So I don't think I'm even worthy of being that kind of a fuck up. And so it just was so messy. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to figure out sexuality in general. That was a lot of awkward situations. They don't teach you anything, and my parents were horrified to talk about it. You know, I got like a whiteboard presentation one night, one time. So there was, you know, not knowing and then not understanding. So there was a lot of trial and error, a lot of error. when I left Mormonism, which was when I was about 19, 20, and yeah, I made a lot of really, let's just say I'm really glad that I'm still okay and like I wasn't harmed really by anything that happened because I put myself in some really risky situations. But that's what happens when you don't, we have a lack of information and we don't talk about things. That's, I think, the main thing about this and that is really hard for me because I know that I had a date rape situation that I very rarely talk about now because I wrote about it openly online and then was instantly corrected by all of these men who, they don't even know me. They weren't there. They have no idea, but it was just a fragile and hard thing to kind of wrap my head around, especially in rape culture where it's always the woman's fault. Mm-hmm. That was my first time ever kissing someone and having sex. That was my first experience. And I had no idea how horrific and traumatizing it was because I had no information to come to the situation with. And so we don't talk about it, which is why we do podcasts like these.
First of all, I just want to say, on behalf of the human race, I'm sorry that you had to experience so many people just like gaslighting and denying your reality. I think that that's happened to a lot of people, especially like women and queer folks and POC and disabled folks online, you know, where people come in and tell you that's not your experience.
Right.
Which is such a shitty thing. But then also having to really like navigate a situation where you didn't really have resources and you didn't have information and you're kind of trying to like figure things out for yourself and feeling like, holy shit, this thing happened and I'm trying to move ahead. And, you know, it just kind of breaks my heart that so many young people, especially kind of come into adulthood and there's this expectation culturally that like, oh, well now you're 18, you just like know all the things and go off and do your thing and you're responsible for everything that happened and kind of this like silence that happens both around body politics and also around like sexuality and the ways we relate to each other.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, I think the most complicated part about that situation was I had no frame of reference for any of it. First of all, I had very strange mixture of feelings where I couldn't believe because of what the world had told me about my body that someone would even find me fuckable. Like that was mind-blowing. So in that way I was like, oh my god, like almost as if it was like a compliment, you know. Mm-hmm. And then what I didn't realize is how much trauma was stored up and the horror. And I know that there was horror there because of what happened immediately afterwards. So it was this confusing combination. And it wasn't until I read Jessica Valenti's Full Frontal Feminism, where she talks about rape, that I realized that that was exactly what happened. So a really heavy thing to start the podcast off with. But I remember just being like, I want to find Mormon girl out there and just start like a school of sexuality, because you know so much of these situations wouldn't happen if we just gave people information so they would know what to do. Mm-hmm. I still dream of that. I just, how I would get, because I'm a little intimidated looking with all the tattoos and scandalous thoughts.
Maybe scandalous someday is good.
Yeah. Let me teach you the ways of the real world so you don't get hurt. That's what I want. Yeah, I figured it out. I figured it out. It took took quite a few years. A lot of healing, but I figured it out.
I sometimes feel like I'm still fucking figuring it out, you know? So it's just,
what? There's different levels. There's totally different levels. I've got the base level and I'm proud of that. So I've got the base level to the point where I understand myself a little. And I understand my worth a little bit. Good place to be.
I would love to talk about that place that you've kind of trial and erred your way to and that you've, you know, kind of grown into in this space, which is, frequently get questions from people who are feeling either insecure about their bodies because they've recently changed or because they're in a new relationship. And fat sex is a thing that some people are talking about. You know, we've had Elle Chase on the show talking about curvy girl sex and all that goodness, but there's still kind of this shame and confusion around it. So as you've kind of come into yourself and you've had all these experiences and had a chance to really try things out and kind of figure out, you know, even the humiliating stuff, how to process that, kind of when you think about fat sex, what comes to mind?
Gratitude that the partner who understands that bodies change over time. And I think that is the most beautiful, profound realization, that when I had met my partner, I did not fully believe. You know, I kind of had this idea that my body, for most of my life, should be smaller. But then also, you know, there's always that concept of like letting yourself go in a relationship that is so shame-filled and so horrific and wrong. I walked into this relationship with this man who was like, yeah, body's changed. It's cool. Like, just from this point of flexibility. And that was so beautiful to hear. And then sometimes I have to learn from other people, and that's okay. But I've slowly started to internalize that myself. And I see the importance of accepting our bodies as they change, because they change as we age. They change if we have a physical trauma. They change if we take a different medication. They change all the time. But there's a lot of different reasons that our bodies change. And so I feel very comfortable, I guess, in my body changing. That doesn't mean it's not, that doesn't mean I freak out, but to have a reminder from someone that I love, that I trust inherently, is really wonderful.
There's a chapter in your book called Three Vaginas.
Yes.
And
there is.
Which I had this fantastic just moment of being in that scene with you, where I was like laughing because the way you related is just so funny, with like the narrator, you know, talking about where, you know, kind of what's going on, but also just this deep sense of like, oh fuck, have I been there? Like those moments of just like, look at this. You know, I just need you to see the same thing that I'm seeing, and then having it met with compassion and how fucking confusing that can be.
And, yes.
And I thought that was such a beautiful demonstration of what you're talking about, of kind of like having this moment of like, holy shit, like what is my body even doing, and freaking out, and then having it met by someone who's like, all right, we're freaking out, but that's okay. And your body's cool. And how just like totally healing, but also confounding that is.
Absolutely. And I think we have to like really hold space for those weird, complex feelings that feel like they don't go together, but they kind of have to hit together and create some sparks for us to do some healing. Body dysmorphia is such a strange thing, because I had been, you know, living in this body that has gained weight over a few years. And I'd seen my body in the mirror before, but for some reason, that one night, it just felt monstrous. I don't know why, but I saw it differently. And our brains are fascinating. And so, yeah, I crashed into the bedroom and I was like, Andy, look at this monster you're sleeping with. Like, I just have to be like, we rely on trust. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm hideous. And you know, like pointed out all of the things that he could look away from. And for him, God bless him, that man has so much patience, but he was just like, you know, I'm sure in his head he was like, I don't know. Like, I actually have not asked him what he was thinking in the moment. My guess is, I have seen you naked like every day for 5 years, so very well aware of what your body looks like. But he was just, and was like, essentially, you're not a monster, you want to cuddle, and I love you and every part of you. And so that was just a really transformative moment. And I think You know, I really believe in shame resiliency, this concept that shame is so harmful and destructive. And I think that if I had to encapsulate my mission in all of its different facets, I think I would just go with shame resiliency. The fact that shame is so harmful, but there are ways, there is one way to kill shame. And Brené Brown explains it this way, which I agree with. And that is, you have to say it to another person and it needs to be met with empathy. And shame cannot thrive in that situation. Sonia Renee Taylor also talks about shame as kind of like a virus. And if it has a host, it will thrive. But if you were to take that virus outside of a body, it would die instantly when it was exposed to air. So I think for me, sex education for myself and exploration, getting rid of that shit was, I have to face it head on and be like, look at me, I'm a monster, because that's how I was feeling. And I said my biggest shame, and then it was met with empathy. And then it became a little easier. And so sometimes it's really hard, especially in very vulnerable places, like when you're completely naked with someone else. Mm-hmm. You've grown being told body's not okay. So yeah, I've had positive and negative experiences, but that was a positive one. Mm-hmm.
There was something else that you named that really hit me in the feels, which is a thing that I have at various times throughout my life believed, but I don't think I would have had the capacity to actually name it for what it was. And I loved reading this statement that you wrote, because I was like, holy fuck, that's totally it, which was, you said, thanks to my deeply internalized and unshakable fat phobia, I wholeheartedly believed that if a thin person showed up in the bedroom, their partner needed nothing else.
Yeah.
That really, this kind of belief of like, well, if I was thin, I literally wouldn't have to do anything else. It would just cure all the things, and the seductiveness of that story and also the harm of it. And I just kind of was like, how many times have I secretly believed that to be true, even if I couldn't have articulated it? And I loved that you just named it so clearly.
Yep. Yeah. And that, you know, that's the story that so many of us are told. I remember in college, a scandalous like friend who probably had Nick Mo's. I stayed in her bedroom and she had Cosmo magazines underneath her bed that I found, which to me was like, like the devil incarnate. I don't know. It's just so funny to think back of like where I am now and where I was then. But I was just fascinated by them because I had never read Cosmo before. And I was probably 18. It was how to look thinner in bed, sex aside. I deeply internalized the concept. And they were like, so I know that I have a fat body and like the person I'm with, I have a fat body and there's no hiding that. But within this article, they in detail explained how to like lengthen your body and how to lay so that your stomach looks smaller and like how to not like all of this, these like really shaming instructions that are not possible if you're actually enjoying having sex. And so it was just like, that was where I was coming from. And so if I was thin, I wouldn't have to do any of that. People, like, those would be irrelevant in my brain. That was, yeah, deeply fat phobic, because that's what I was raised in. So I was like, man, if I was thin, I wouldn't have to do any of these things that they teach, you know, women like me, and I could just show up and people would be glad. That's what I was told through subconscious and very blatant messaging. And that's not the truth I've come to realize now. But that is, I think, something that we, even in 2018, you know, if you were to watch, I'm thinking of Orange is the New Black, you know, as even in like current television shows, there's still that emphasis of needing to do less if you're born traditionally attractive.
Yep. and all the ways that so many of us sacrifice our pleasure on the altar of trying to guess what people are thinking and to position our bodies in such a way that the truth isn't revealed, and wondering if what we're doing is good enough, and the ways that like pleasure becomes very challenging to just be in and savor and delight when we've got that inner monologue running and we're just body checking endlessly.
Yes. And always for the other person. Yeah, I feel like it's a lot like authenticity. Like if, like often things will always be better if you are authentic in your writing. A lot of people are like, how do I connect? And the answer is always be authentic. And so it, for me, that endless monologue and trying to shift myself so that I don't look a certain way or so that my whoever I'm with feels better, I mean, that's not authentic at all. And I'm not enjoying any of that. And there's no real connection. And so I just think that, you know, it's unnecessary. And once I learned how, but you have to have a safe, you have to have a safe person or people to kind of experiment that like sexual authenticity with, to even know it's possible. So it's hard to find too. Once you realize like, oh man, I am never going back to like that performance sex, like where I, you know, put on a fucking play for another person and totally, yeah, sacrifice my pleasure for them as an apology for existing.
So you just mentioned the importance of finding that safe person or those safe people where you can actually kind of like fuck up and be imperfect and try the things and see what it's like and be held. And you mentioned this incredible trust that you have with your partner, Andy. And I loved so much how you wrote about how your biggest fear was honest, committed, transparent, healthy, intimate love and all the vulnerability that came with that.
Yeah. Yeah. What? I kind of had a meltdown on my couch about it.
Yeah.
This is too normal. I don't understand not having people like tell me I'm a horrible person in a relationship. What's going on?
What's it been like kind of navigating that over the years of kind of letting this thing unfold and consistently being met with that patience and that space when you do have a really bad body day or when the trolls do actually get to you? You know, like I think for a lot of people, they haven't yet experienced that. And I think for some people, the thought of experiencing it is fucking terrifying. And so they just kind of keep the self-sabotage going. I know I have done that in the past. So what's that been like to kind of grow into this place of like trust and vulnerability?
Well, I've definitely, yeah, done the self-sabotage as well. I think the reason it feels different for me now is because, as I explained in Landwhale, we had kind of a rocky start, but it was founded on trust and the promise that we would always say the hard things, even if we knew it might be met with other hard things. And that is really difficult, especially I'm thinking of like when we don't have sex for a while. How do you like have that conversation about why, you know, like you don't actually really want to know why and you don't want to talk about why, but, for the chapter that I talk about things that actually affect our sex life and things that don't, I actually talked to Andy about it and we have had multiple conversations on like, you know, either he's saying, you know, I wish. And he's never pressured me, which is also like a beautiful gift. I've had people who are very like, just put a lot of pressure on you to always have sex. And that's not great. So he's never pressured me, which is a really beautiful thing. But, you know, I'll bring it up and I'll be like, you haven't had sex in a while. And I'm just wondering why. And then we'll talk about it. And we'll come up with, and he's brilliant and wonderful. And so we'll come up with like the things like, you know, he has bad body days. Sometimes and things like if we make plans to have sex then we then feel obligated and that obligation is a turn off. So let's just let it happen. And identifying things like, you know, when you're having an anxiety attack, Jess, it's not really that much of a turn on. And like, you know, the things that really do get in the way and why. And when you name them, then it's a little easier and you can write a chapter about it in a book called Land Whale. And there's a list of things that do affect our sex life. And it's things that lies I've been told, mental health, bad days. There's a whole list. And the things that have not, and I had to realize this, and it was hard to realize because we want to blame things on our body because we still, even if we're like in a liberation phase, we still on a cellular level, because we've been taught this so long, think that we can change our bodies. Like we have control over them. And so I think a lot of times we want to blame on our body because then we have control over the problem, because we can just change our body and fix the problem. But what I realized is that a lot of the things that were issues are things that I can't change. And like my brain chemistry, or the fact that diet culture exists and tells me that I'm not worth shit. And so having those honest conversations has been really, really cool. And we're now able to name, I mean, after doing this for a few years, what really is going on. And then we address it. And then, yeah, it's been a really interesting and difficult journey. I think there are just things you don't want to talk about, but we have, and I'm really glad we have, because I think it forms a greater bond between us and also kind of removes the extra guilt and shame that is really unnecessary.
When you think about pleasure and sex and desirability, what do you wish for more fat folks, and, you know, in a similar vein, like more disabled folks and trans folks, but like, what do you wish for more people to know when it comes to kind of the physical delight and the connection that can come from those things?
Well, I can't speak for everyone. I don't have everyone's experiences, and I think our histories really shape us, and mine is very different from others, but here's what I would recommend. I would recommend leaving two things. Basically, I would, okay, here's what I would recommend. Basically, I would recommend a fuck it attitude. And that's really hard if you're in a long-term relationship, partnership that has like a history. But what was most liberating for me was to have an experience where one day I said, fuck it. I'm gonna do things for me that bring me pleasure, and I'm going to treat myself like I deserve it. And even if I don't internally believe that, I'm still going to try it and see what happens. And it was really transformative for me, because then that was the day that I realized that my body was capable of so much more than I thought. And your fuck it could be with your partner or your partners or whoever it is that is in your life that you're having sex with. And you could say, fuck it, I'm going to be totally honest with you. And then say that scary thing and just see what they say. Who knows? And that's also a scary thing because we can't control other people. But I think the fuck it attitude is a really, really telling and healing thing to try. And it could be different levels. So people will have to figure out kind of what that, how that applies to them. But every time I said fuck it and tried something and released myself of everyone else's expectations and all the things I've been told and just followed like my intuition and my worthiness, it has been a wonderful experience for me. So fuck it is my suggestion.
Love it. And I love too that what you're offering is you don't necessarily have to believe it, but if you give yourself a chance to just try it on without having to believe, what might happen?
Yeah. Can I tell you about something really fascinating, like a mental health therapy thing that actually applies here?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make it brief. There is a therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT. I'm quite honest. I wish that the whole world could take like an intensive class, because what it does is it takes old survival tools and coping mechanisms that we use have learned to survive that harm us, and it replaces it with tools that are helpful. And so one of the tools that is my very favorite is called opposite action. And it literally applies in like every area of life, and it totally applies here. So the concept is, if you cannot, it's kind of talking about spiraling thinking, which I think that we all have in some area of our life. Let's talk about sex. You've spiraling thinking about how unworthy you are, and you're going to be terrible at this, and pleasure is not meant for you. If that spiraling thinking is something that you can't change mentally, like you can't talk yourself out of it, I've been there a million times, a million different things where you just can't change your thoughts. It's just not working. What Marshall Linehan says is you change your actions, and that in turn changes your thoughts. And it's kind of this physical manifestation of what you want to be thinking. So that's kind of what the fuck it approach is whatever you feel like you can't get over, like what I just mentioned, like I'm unworthy, I can't do it right, and it's not about me. Go in there and make it about you. Know it, like tell yourself that you're worth it, and do the things that you are so caught up in your head about, and see what happens to the way you think. Because more often than not, thoughts then change. And so that's like a really helpful thing for a lot of different reasons, but the opposite act, whatever you feel like you are not worthy of or can't do, try it and see what happens.
That sounds like a juicy experiment just waiting to happen, everyone.
A million times over. You could try it with everything. Like, I just think it could be so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm even thinking about for people who are like, you know, unpacking diet culture or coming out of like eating disorder recovery, that kind of thought of like, well, I couldn't possibly eat that cake. Oh my God, what happens if I eat the cake? Well, maybe if you eat the cake, you'd feel differently about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I use it in a, like, I wasn't allowed to feel pleasure, and I was like, fuck it, I'm going in, I'm going to feel pleasure, make it about me, and I did, and it really changed the way I thought about things. And this is not to say, I want to always give this disclaimer, that shit sticks with you forever, because we're kind of trying to, like, relearn a whole lifetime of messaging. But having that first experience, it gives you a taste of something that, you know, I didn't know I could have, and once you have that taste, you can't really go back. Not completely, because you know it exists now. So be gentle on yourself and know that it's a long process. But also, you know, I just want people to have permission to try the things they've been told can't do when they really want to do those things.
Yeah. One of the other things that you share in your book, and it's something that I felt so personally too, was just around the shame that you had around body hair and finding out that you had PCOS, and then kind of this coming out process that you had with Andy. And I'd love to hear a little bit more. I know a lot of listeners out there have PCOS or are in relationships with people who have PCOS. Can you talk a little bit about kind of how your experience of PCOS kind of merged and overlaid with your experience of like being in a fat body and navigating the world as a woman? What's that been like for you?
My God. Yeah. So my symptoms of PCOS have increased as I've gotten older. But it started from a very young age where I was just very aware that like facial hair was not okay. And there was a lot of shame around that even in middle school. And I really, really wish that we talked more about this. And the reality is that, like, we don't even have research. I think it's 1 in 5 number is 5, say women. But I'm just going to say 1 in 5 people that have ovaries have PCOS. And so it's something that we should be studying and talking about a hell of a lot more. But for me, how it manifested when it came to sex and relationships is that I was so embarrassed by, for me, like the main part was kind of like the sideburny hair that I had and have. And I'm having this thought multiple of I don't be in a long-term relationship. I'm going to go to sleep next to this person, and then I'm going to wake up with some hair growth, and they're going to be able to see it. And I was so ashamed of that. Literally throughout every person, including long-term partners, I had never talked about it with anyone, never mentioned it. We talked about shame. I never let that shame monster out. Instead, I hit it the best I could. So I would like wake up in the morning, whether it was somebody I was just sleeping with or it was somebody who was my partner, I would run to the bathroom and shave my face, quickly like slip back into bed, and then pretend like I hadn't done that. And it sounds ridiculous to me, but I have so much compassion for that version of me, because that's how shame was. And I didn't want to have to deal with that on a daily basis. So I was like, well, I guess I'll just have one night stands for the rest of my life, because then I don't have to worry about my hair growth. Like, that's literally, I was letting it dictate everything in my life. And again, first trusting relationship that I've had that's for real. So I think that, you know, people might get tired of hearing about Andy, but really it's the trust that's there. I think that's the key part. I, for the first time ever in my whole life, was sitting next to him and I said, "Hey, Andy, we've been dating 4 years, but I have facial hair." And he was like, "I know." And it was just this like, of course he knows. It's so interesting to me that we think, oh, the amount of shame and then delusion that we cause ourselves, the pain that comes from that, which is not our fault. People teach us to feel that way. But I was like, you know. And I was like, okay, he really obviously doesn't get like how horrible this is, because I've been dealing with this my whole life. Basically the worst ever happened to me. And no, but like, I have facial hair and it's not sexy. Like, I had to tell him. And he looked at me and he's so kind. And he's like, I can think of a lot of other things that are less sexy. And then I went back to watching the show. And I now live in this space where I still have, like, it still grows. You can get laser hair removal and PCOS hair will come back. And it's just like one of those things that, that is a part of my life. And, you know, we talk about loving our bodies. You don't have to love, I don't think, but I think I've kind of made peace with it, that it's part of my life. And so I do shave, and I have good friends that don't have full beards, and it's a person, but, you know, just not talk about it, and that shame that's like really stunts a lot of joy, I think, that we could feel if we didn't have all of that going on in our heads. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, how many mornings did I like run to the bathroom to shave and then like quietly get back in bed? So many, so many mornings.
Yes. Oh, that feels so familiar. I have done that for years around a couple of like chin hairs that I have that have always just been like, don't touch my face because you might feel that there's hairs, and just the distress around that, which has kept me out of so many moments. Like, people have been touching me and I have not been feeling their touch. I've just been in my head thinking, oh God, don't do this thing. And I mean, like, that makes me sad. And I know why I did it, and I don't blame myself for it, but just like, holy shit, the mental Olympics.
Yes, you put it so much more eloquently. Like, really, you are, I'm just so amazed. You should have probably written the book that we're talking about. It's just what comes out of your mouth is so amazing. Yes, and one of the hottest things, and this was a reclamation for me, one of the hottest things is to be like kissed on my neck, like underneath, which is where facial hair is for me. And so, because I was so ashamed. Yeah, I'm over that part. But to be honest with you, you know, also, like, there comes some back hair and a lot of other symptoms that are so difficult to deal with. And because we don't talk about it, man, when I talk about PCOS on Instagram, it is like the most commented, like, I post, because we're not being open about it because we're all still living underneath this cloak of shame. And yeah. So after I met with Andy, I like was in Jamaica, felt brave enough to like show a picture of me with like shaving cream on my face, pre-shave. And I think the caption just said that PCOS life. And so many people identified with it. So, I mean, there's so many of us that have it, and I lost out on a lot of pleasure, but no more. No more. Neck kissing is absolutely allowed in my life now.
Yay, more neck kissing.
More neck kissing. Hair be damned.
Yeah, I've been challenging a lot of my stories around femininity and hair thanks to the amazing and beautiful Alok. And, you know, mm-hmm. I love how Alok is like, you know, I see myself as feminine, and here's my fully hairy chest and my facial hair and my beard. And it just really made me question, like, yeah, why the hell do I feel like I'm not feminine if I like have underarm hair, or if I stop shaving my legs? And I've been doing an experiment now for about 8 months where I haven't shaved my underarms, and I've only shaved my legs like once or twice. And it brings me some distress, but it also kind of feels good to be like, fuck you, stories. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to just be in my body however it wants to be. And it's complicated. Yeah.
And as fat people, I also think we have to be, are told that we need to put on this performance hyper femininity.
Yes.
For me, I didn't really realize I was doing this until I really had to sit down and think about it. But I was performing this like quote unquote good fatty role by dressing up like a pinup for years when I was in my 20s. I was part of a pinup troupe. I only hung out with particular groups of people who were really into rockabilly and the pinup world. And I think I was so drawn to it because it was a place that was alternative. You know, there's a lot of tattoos, also very problematic. That's a whole other podcast. So they were a little more accepting. They were a little more alternative. But I think what I didn't realize is that I was doing it because deep down, I was trying to compensate for the fact that I was fat and therefore invisible or not sexy or not worthy. And so it was kind of a performance I was putting on for the world. And the thing that changed was not really how I dress, since I do wear those things sometimes, except for heels. Like, I'm so over heels. I think I wear heels once a year. They just are not comfortable.
Agreed.
I have a lot of respect for people who wear heels. I just do. But I still do those things that I used to do. But now it comes from a place of, I don't need you to respect me more because I'm fat and performing this femininity and this like put togetherness. I'm wearing this because it makes me feel good. And we can deconstruct what makes me feel good for days, but we're influenced by culture. And it makes me feel good. So I'm wearing it because I want to, not because I need your approval. And it could look completely the same to an outsider, but internally it's a completely different dialogue.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's such a shift when, like in my experience, I spent a significant amount of my life performing the good fatty, you know, like talking about the workout regimens that I was doing and being as feminine as I could in as many ways as I could, even if it was really uncomfortable or even painful, because I was being rewarded for that. And I received praise for that. And that felt like finally I'm being seen, and finally it's okay to be me in a certain way by not, you know, trying not to be me. The internal experience of I'm just trying to chase the reward because I don't feel good enough is so different from, fuck yeah, I'm wearing like eyeliner and falsies because it makes me feel hot about myself and I could give a shit if you like it or not. Like that's a very different internal experience, because when you take the falsies off at the end of the day, the person that you're looking at in the mirror, you have very different feelings about.
Absolutely. And it's such a complicated thing to work out internally. Like, it took me years and I'm still working on it, because you're right. The world does reward us systematically on purpose so that we continue to follow their rules. And literally, a couple weeks ago, I was doing a photo shoot. Andy takes pictures. I'm so lucky to have as a blogger, somebody who's a photographer. So I was dressed up in a polka dot dress. and winged eyeliner, and I, you know, like great, like perfectly coiffed hair, not coif hair. Is it coif? Because that is such a weird word. I like coif. I'm the kind of person that reads things and then just makes up how they actually are said. So I had perfect hair, and Andy was like, hey, we should stop by our favorite bar real fast and let's just have a beer because it's hot out. And I was like, that's great. And I've been in that bar many times before recently because it's close to our house. And I could feel the shift, how the patrons react. As a fat person in the past experiences that just wore whatever and no makeup and was just there to exist and enjoy life versus this very hyper feminine, more like I'm intentional in my makeup and looking beautiful. The difference, the energy, the way I was served, everything was so different. And so it's so hard because it's created that way so that we continue these systematic rules of really oppression. And there's reward built in that. But there's reward in, and this is what I want to put my energy into. There's also a reward that comes with knowing that you're okay if you're going to go shop for groceries in sweatpants and not doing your hair. Because that, to me, used to be a thing. I was scared to go buy food without looking put together all of the assumptions that people might make. So there is liberation in being like, whatever I'm wearing right now and however I look right now, I need to go to the grocery store and run this errand and I'm going to do it. And I'm comfortable enough to just do it as I am. And so that for me is the reward that I work towards. You know, everyone's in a different place and that's okay.
Oh man, that gentleness is so important because there is no end. There is just tomorrow and dealing with whatever comes up.
Fucking true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to respect your time. I know we're starting to run a little bit short, but I have one more question for you. And I would just love to know, what is your relationship to pleasure now? Whether it's, you know, sexual pleasure, physical pleasure, any other kind of pleasure. For so many of us that are in bodies that we either feel like have betrayed us or that are constantly the subject of violence, pleasure can sometimes be really complicated and hard to access. And so I'm wondering, like, when you just kind of think about the ways that pleasure shows up in your life and you make space for it now, what does that look like? What is your relationship to pleasure these days?
I think that the most pleasurable things for me are the ones that I'm just learning this new thing of connecting my brain and my body and asking myself, both brain and body, what do you want? What do you need? And then doing those things. Mm-hmm. And it changes every day and allow flexibility. And for me, pleasure has been about thinking, you know, what kind of thing can I do for myself today? What do I want to eat? Want to wear? Who do I want to see? And then trying it and then seeing if that really was pleasurable for me. And if it was, that's great. Documented. If it's not, great. Documented. And I'm relearning this body, this brain right now in this moment, what feels good to me and what doesn't. And I know that that's going to change too. So I just allow a lot of flexibility and kindness towards myself, trying to be as non-judgmental as I can. And that applies for me, you know, within my relationship and within my sex life and in everything else outside of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Flexibility and kindness sound like something so many of us could use a lot more of.
It's also the hard, you know, we're not really given a framework to work within.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of have to figure it out for ourselves. We kind of have to live in the gray area, and the gray area is where I think the most healing happens, but it's also the most uncomfortable.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And because we want to know that, yes, everything will be okay. We want a promise and to go with intuition instead and kind of wade into that gray area is terrifying. And it's not something that people have to do. I think that, you know, it's okay to also respect those boundaries and be like, no, I'm not ready for this yet. So whatever works for
for you. Yeah. I love that of, you know, whatever it takes to get through today, whether it's coping with food or coping with sleep or just kind of cutting everything off and that's how you survive today, or getting through today is thriving and celebrating and trying scary things and leaning into edges and having as many orgasms as you can and everything in between. The gentle tenderness that's in that of wherever you are, it's where you are, and that's okay. And you can change or you can stay the same, and it's your life, your body, do what you need to.
Absolutely. I think in summary, you know, existing is the ultimate victory, and I feel like whatever that takes for you, just this is just summarizing what you said, but I think this is also at the end of my book, is whatever you do, existing is victory enough, and that ultimate, you know, award. And sometimes that thing under your covers and just continuing to breathe all day, and sometimes that means going out and chasing every fucking dream you've ever thought of. And those are both equal in value because they are both keeping you here on this earth where we need you. So yeah, existing is the ultimate victory. I really do believe that.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's so much more I'd love to talk to you about, but I know we are kind of at the end of our time together. So for people who want to stay in touch with you, how can they find you online and follow along with your adventures?
The easiest place is just to go to my blog, which I think it's funny that I still have a blog, but I still like blogging. So it's themindbaker.com. And then there you can find my book or where I'm speaking or my social media, all that good stuff.
Great. I will have links to all of that in the show notes so everyone can just click through and follow and buy and do all the things. Jez, thank you so much for being here and lending your voice to the show and giving all of this wonderful permission and wisdom to everybody listening. I really appreciate it.
You're so kind. I'm so honored you asked me. Thank you.
You're welcome. To everybody else who tuned in, thank you so much for being here. Of course, I will be back next week. If you've got any questions or comments, just head to sexgetsreal.com and hit send a note. I love hearing from you. And until next time, this is Dawn Sarah. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is-